I was wondering if you could tell me about the house that we bought. It's at the top of the hill, the Reynolds house.
That is one of our most interesting landmarks. Did you know a painter lived there once, an artist?
The attic is very much like an artist studio.
Oh, yes, yes. He was very talented, you know, studied in Paris and everything. But unfortunately, he died young, still unknown, and only one of his paintings survived.
Is it possible to see that painting somewhere?
Why, we have it right here. Come, I'll show it to you. David Reynolds, his name was. He married into one of our town's oldest families, the Harringtons. The wedding reception took place right in your front yard. Then, the very next day, when they were getting ready to go away on the honeymoon, one of the horses went wild, rearing out of control, and it killed her, his bride.
What was her name?
Well, now, let me think. I believe it was Pamela.
The story goes he went a little crazy after that, claimed he saw his bride come back. He'd be driving a buggy down the road, and suddenly she'd appear in the dress she'd worn the day she died. She'd appear, and before he could get close to her, she'd disappear.
Shortly after that, the story was he took up with some other woman. It was caused quite a little scandal, him taking up with her so soon after his wife's death.
So what happened?
Well, that's the sad thing. He was killed. It's been an unsolved mystery to this very day. Some suspect it was the woman he took up with because she was seen leaving the scene of the crime. Others think it was his father-in-law, a bitter old man who blamed David Reynolds for the death of his daughter and challenged him to a duel. Well, anyway, shortly after Pamela's death, on the night of the town's turn-of-the-century celebration, he was found shot. Murdered, they say. There, that's the painting. Isn't she pretty? You look remarkably like her. Put you in that dress, your hair in the same kind of upsweep. Is something wrong, dear? You're so pale.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, still in time, not time traveling at all. And with me today, as always, is Trish Coughlin.
Yes, yes. We are in the current right time, I believe. I don't know. This is 2020. Can we time travel? I wouldn't mind.
You're right.
It seems like we shouldn't be here.
And Jeff Omega is also on the line.
Now, if you're in the market for a house, you have to make sure that the cupboards are authentic.
What?
Was Morgan Freeman in this movie? I don't remember seeing him.
I don't either.
At the very, very beginning of this movie, when they're shopping for a house, there's just this guy with this, like, Maine-esque accent who's like, I was like, oh yeah, those cupboards, they are real. She's like, oh
that's your
wow.
Maine accent. Okay. I can't believe you just whipped that out and Sam is not here today. Sam's away and everybody will have fun.
Yes.
I don't know what that says about Sam. He's unfortunately, he's got his day job to do, and sometimes they schedule him on record day. It happens.
Yes.
It sounds like he's going to be away a lot this month, but because his employers suck. City of Calgary. Don't you know we have a podcast to record? What the fuck?
Right?
Okay, so this week, guys, it is a fan challenge. Man, the fan challenges have been coming out a lot. If there's one shining thing about 2020 is that our fans are quite bored and sitting at home and want to be part of the show. And I'm okay with that because we got to do a fan challenge by Sage. Thanks for bringing us The Two Worlds of Jenny Logan from 1979. This is a TV film. And what's with Jenny's? Like, yeah. Can't they find a nice boy in their own time? I don't understand. We did the portrait of Jenny a few weeks back, about a month or two back, as a fan challenge. And now we have another Jenny who can't fall in love in her own damn time. It's a little bit of a reverse on that theme. And there's even, guess what? A portrait of Jenny in this one as well.
There really is.
It is unbelievable. I'm like, okay, there's another painter, another painting of Jenny. What the fuck is going on here? How is there more than one of these?
Jennies are time traveling painters models.
I'm trying to think if there was a Jenny on Doctor Who.
You know, the more I think about this, the more I wonder, is this movie a remake of The Portrait of Jenny, but from the female perspective?
You know, it is based on a novel by David L. Williams, and they certainly don't acknowledge that movie, but it certainly feels like it could be something like that.
Yeah, because the time travel is similar, too.
In a way, except it was now... We get it from her perspective in a present-day scenario. Well, present-day being 1979.
Yeah.
Traveling back to late 1800s at the turn of the century. And it's weird. They move in this colonial home. It's a heritage house. There's even a little plaque when you move in. You know? I don't know. Nice. They wouldn't let that happen here. It would be a tourist thing.
Authentic cupboards.
Authentic cupboards. They made sure it was authentic cupboards just so they could give us the one ghosty moment where something breaks and they don't know why. When the glass on the cupboard breaks.
Yes.
I did laugh when she went to the garbage to grab the glass and started kissing it.
Right?
Well, what's this about? What's going on here?
Maybe he was right. Kind of strange. Yeah, maybe he was kissing glass.
Yeah, maybe Jenny's husband was right to make her go to the shrink.
Yeah, because it's glass. It's sharp. It's bad.
Yeah. I was pretty sure the garbage can was empty when they dumped it in there, and then it was at the top of a very full garbage can.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. So somebody was moving it up.
I've never been so in love with somebody to fish broken glass out of the garbage to kiss it.
Yeah, neither have I. That is, I guess that's a level that we need to work on. That's an achievement.
Well, there's levels to everything. Like, digging through the garbage, it depends on what I'm looking for. But, like, I think I've been in love before, but never enough to clean the hair out of the drain. It disgusts me so much, and I can't. So, I mean, everybody has their line.
That's right. Yours is hair in the drain, and... Jeff's is glass in a garbage can, but who knows? It probably has actually never come up.
True.
Let alone kissing it passionately. I love how he walks in on her doing it. It's like, nothing happened.
Right? He's like, I saw you.
Cradling it lovingly. It's so weird.
Yeah.
Sage, what have you done? We also breaking a rule for Sage because this was a CBS TV film from 1979. But you know what? There's something here we can play with. There was a certain aspect when the cupboard did break that I really glommed onto, and maybe that's something we can work with, that this could be a love story. Confused to be a ghost story because of the time shifts. Like, the cupboard breaks of something that Mark Singer's David Reynolds did in the past, but it breaks in the present. So something from the past did change to cause that cupboard to break in the first place. It would have been nice to see that scene, but if they had given us more of that, I'm like, ooh, that's really interesting.
There were a lot of bits all throughout where... Like, I saw that the director is the same guy who directed Dark Knight of the Scarecrow, which always heard very good things about atmospherically. And you could really see how the guy who directed this movie would be good at a horror movie because there are a lot of horror elements, and there's a lot of tension building and atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it kind of fizzles because they definitely put the focus on the love story, but it does, like, anytime you think it could get scary, it doesn't. No. Which is a shame, because I felt like, oh, there's some lost opportunities here. Like, I was trying to figure out a way that we could remake this, we could still hold on to the love story without it being feeling like the others as well. You know,
well, the
ghosts that don't know they're ghosts.
Yeah, and it's sort of, it's the love story, it's like a ghost story, and then there's a point where it's sort of a little bit of like a mystery that she's trying to solve by talking to people and figuring out what happened so many years ago. So it's kind of, it's a little bit all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a great, I thought it was a great hook that immediately the person who she gets interested in, she finds out that he dies, and then she's given the tidbit that one of the suspects might be possibly herself. Mm-hmm. That was fun.
Well, I feel like every time it feeds you something, it doesn't quite go anywhere. Like, the mystery doesn't really get developed. Like, I want to know what happened to David's wife, Pamela. Like, I wanted to see that.
Yeah.
Like, that would have been a great way to open in the past with her murder or with something, because David's the prime suspect in this murder. So there's a murder mystery that isn't solved. We know that David's blamed for it by Pamela's father, which results in David's death, or so history says. But we never really find out what happened to Pamela.
You don't, but
and that would have been something fun to run with.
Definitely. Yeah, but you do know that Elizabeth is the reason he died. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just assumed that she took out Pamela because she did want him very badly.
Yeah. Yeah, and that would have been interesting if they would have hinted that her sister Elizabeth was the one that did it. But yeah, we never really see those murderous tendencies until the jealousy kicks up as we see David and Jenny and their relationship starting to develop, and David just spurning Elizabeth's advances, sometimes pretty coldly. But, you know, some people don't get a hint.
No, like, she's obsessed. Yeah. So obsessive people are not going to get it.
Yeah, and again, another aspect that they just didn't take far enough, I don't think.
Yeah, but for a TV movie, how far?
Sure.
Probably go a bit farther.
Sure, yeah. I mean, you're losing time. Actually, I mean, it still was 96 minutes or something like that. Mm-hmm. You can catch it on YouTube, by the way. But, I mean, you're allowing for commercial breaks and stuff. So that does kind of, like, beg the question, where can you cut and snip so you can add some of this other stuff? But I feel like the more interesting aspects were the things that got glazed over in this movie. I actually quite enjoyed it for a TV movie. Lindsay Wagner always, as an actress, even when she was doing television, always tried to find interesting projects. I mean, she's certainly most famous for being the Bionic Woman, and that was my big hitch with this thing, is when Sage recommended it, she said it was kind of like a reverse Portrait of Jenny, and it's free on YouTube, and it's like a time thing, and I kind of looked into it a little bit. I'm like, oh, I don't know if we need to do another one of these, and I'm like, oh, it's got the Beastmaster and Bionic Woman. Yeah, we're doing it.
Yeah. When I was like, ooh, Mark Singer.
And how crazy was his mustache?
Yeah, that had to go. That really messed with a lot of my feelings for him.
It was pre-Beastmaster, so he was a lot thinner at that point, too. I was like, oh, this is probably the youngest I've ever seen Singer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even now when he makes appearances on Arrow, he's still a fairly big dude for his age.
Yeah, yeah. No, he was a lean youngster at this point. Yeah. But yeah, the mustache has to go. I think I'm just going to say it right now. No mustache. I don't care who it is. Has to go.
Yeah. I don't know. Was that an authentic period mustache? I don't know if it was.
I don't think it was.
Was he like doing porn on the side?
Well, I love how the person who presumably designed the costumes, you know, was just like, what should the male look like? I don't know, some guy on the front of a Harlequin novel. Like, tear that shirt open.
Yeah, his shirt is always a little bit open.
It's like halfway unbuttoned and like pulled open at all in every shot.
Absolutely. I didn't mind that. But I had another question about the costumes. The dress is what transports Jenny back into time. And at one point, though, she's with David, and they've fallen in the lake, but she's afraid to take off the dress, thinking that it might just transport her back. And she takes it off, and then she's got oldie-timey underwear under. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, so when she transports herself, oldie-timey underwear just appears under the dress?
Or was it part with the dress? Maybe you should have established that the old-timey underwear was there. And do you want to put on 100-year-old underwear?
No. Yeah,
that's what I was saying when we were watching it. Like, presumably all of the undergarments were with the dress. Like, how do we know it's not a magic corset?
Right? Yeah, maybe dress had nothing to do with it. And honestly, after David stopped thinking that he was seeing a ghost of his long dead wife, or his fairly recently passed away wife, who knows? After he realizes this is a different person with Jenny, every time she shows up, she's like, "Don't you have any other fucking clothes, woman?"
Right?
Like, well, it was late 1800s.
Oh wait, yeah, you don't bathe one like every day either.
Yeah, okay. I might forgive that one.
It's like, man, you know, no wonder you're wearing that dress all the time. You're always so clean.
Yeah.
You always have this weird chemically smell in your hair.
Yeah.
It's Pret.
Your hair looks like it's been washed, like, recently.
You must be rich.
Yep. Today I met a woman with hair that smelt like flowers indescribable, that flowed like silk, like you wouldn't believe. Who is this magic woman?
Herbal essences. That's the commercial.
Yeah. I swear to God, if Morgan Freeman isn't in your casting, I'm gonna have to murder you. To throw you out of the airlock once again. I don't know how.
It's 1899
back.
It's kind of, if he's got to be in the current time, back then it's not so great. Which also brings me to Jenny's idea. She's like, I loved it back then. Are you sure, girl?
That's a very privileged perspective to live in,
right? Yeah.
Well, and the one thing we didn't say is that she moved into this colonial home as kind of a reboot to the relationship with her husband, Michael, who had been cheating on her with a young student, like a teenager. Dude, she just fell on your cock. Accidents happen. Apparently they worked it out and there was still some love in the relationship, but there was also that looming memory and she couldn't really let him touch her physically. No sexy times for Michael.
No sexy times.
Yeah, he was in purgatory there. All right.
Yeah.
Well, as well as he deserved. Okay, let's move to the trailer. This is the original CBS trailer for the television film, and we'll be right back to talk more.
The two worlds of Jenny Logan. When Jenny Logan fell in love with an old house and an antique dress, she never could have guessed where they might take her.
It was terrifying. I really felt like I was in another century.
Lindsay Wagner is Jenny Logan, a woman drawn to another time and another love.
Pamela! Stay! I love you!
What was her name? I believe it was Pamela. You look remarkably like her.
I didn't ask for this to happen to me.
Torn between her husband in this century and her lover in the last.
Will you leave your husband? Will you come away with me?
She must risk her life to save the man she loves.
Tomorrow night, I will kill you.
Couldn't I change what's going to happen?
You can't save him. He's already dead.
I don't believe a word I've been saying.
A spellbinding story of yearning and passion. The two worlds of Jenny Logan. Next, which one will she choose?
That was The Two Worlds of Jenny Logan from 1979, based on the novel by David L. Williams, who did Fly Fishing and Beyond the Pole. The teleplay was written and directed by Frank DeFelitta. He did Scissors, Killer in the Mirror, and, as Jeff mentioned, The Dark Knight of the Scarecrow, which is pretty cool. This movie starred Lindsay Wagner as Jenny Logan, of course, most famous for being the Bionic Woman, and most recently was on a recent season of Grey's Anatomy, which I was shocked to learn was still going after all this time.
It's never ending. Grey's Anatomy is like romance Simpsons.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm like, this is Simpsons. It just won't go away. Mark Singer is David Reynolds, the lover lost in time. And we talked about him first way back in episode 4.
Beastmaster!
Yay! And he's also most famous for the V series as well. Might be before some of our listeners' time, but I loved V.
Oh, B was great. You also get a young, I think Robert Englund is in that as
well. Yeah, Robert Englund, pre-Freddy, I do believe. At least in the original miniseries. Yeah, he was very lovable in that one. He was my favorite character in that as well. But I loved Mark Singer in that show as well. And Michael Ironside was in the second series, like the actual TV series after they did the minis. So lots of good people came out of V.
Really good people.
Alan Feinstein was Michael Logan, the husband. And he was primarily, like, anybody who watched TV in that era would recognize him over the next decade because he was very famous for being on daytime soaps. He was on Santa Barbara and Falcon Crest and General Hospital. He was all over the place. So, yeah, this was a step up.
Yeah.
Although, you know, if you haven't got some soap chops under your belt, I mean, you had to put in a performance and get it right pretty much the first time because they were just go. You're filming a daily.
Oh, yeah. It's a training ground for a lot of people, actually.
Oh, yeah. That is acting boot camp. And it's funny that some people hang in there. I'm like, why would you want to do that all the time? That sounds horrible.
For decades.
Yeah. But like, clearly comfortable in doing so. It's steady work.
I guess. But I don't know. I don't know if I can be my own twin only so many times.
Right. Linda Gray was the sister of the dead character Pamela, Elizabeth Harrington, and Linda Gray we've actually talked about before in episode 26.
Oh my god, I don't remember.
That was Oscar.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Henry Wilcoxon was Harrington, the old man, the father to Elizabeth and Pamela that was out for blood. Mm-hmm. He was in the Ten Commandments and Caddyshack just to show his range.
From Ten Commandments to Caddyshack, a biography of
Henry Wilcoxon.
That is it. I love that.
Joan Darling was Dr. Erica Lauren, the psychologist, and she was a regular, actually she was a TV director. She's actually done quite a bit of television, but she directed lots of episodes of Doogie Howser MD.
Nice.
Yeah. Irene Tedrow was Mrs. Bates, the historian, and I love this other. This is another TV movie I loved, Empire of the Ants. You remember that one?
I've heard of it, but I never saw it.
Oh, I had, yeah. It was weird. This was kind of my, like, I didn't want to watch horror movies, but I was okay with TV horror.
Yes.
So I watched, like, Empire of the Ants and Kingdom of the Spiders and stuff like that.
I did watch a few. The Mad Magician really messed me up. I didn't. That scared the crap out of me.
I don't remember that one. Peter Hobbs was old John, and he was in the Andromeda Strain, but he did a lot of voice work, too. And, Jeff, you'll like this. He did voice work for Heavy Traffic and Wizards.
Oh, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I know, right? I was like, oh, that's so cool. I don't even remember who old John was, but the fact that he did that, that's part of some animation history.
Yeah. Old John was the guy at the museum who was telling her about the guns.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The husband to the wife.
Oh, don't you know how guns work?
That's right. Okay, that was old John. Constant McCashin was Beverly, and we actually talked about her in episode 207 not that long ago, The Out of Towners.
Oh, yeah. Who was she in that?
I do not remember, but she was in it. She was, I mean, let's face it, The Out of Towners was focused on the two characters, so it just could have been somebody they wandered in, got their little bit in, and we never see him again.
True.
But go listen to her episode. Maybe we did mention her. I don't know.
I mean, The Out of Towners.
I barely remember what we did last week, let alone like 40, 50
episodes.
Well,
I think The Out of Towners, didn't it have Billy Dee Williams?
Yeah.
Like a minor role?
Yeah. Yeah, he was a clerk, I do believe. Charles Thomas Murphy was Don, and he was in the History of the World Part 1.
Nice.
And Alan Williams was Ed Hartley, and he was in a movie called Meteor, which I also had saw. It was funny how many TV movies, or I'm not even sure if Meteor was a TV movie. I seem to remember Sean Connery being in that one. But correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm sure you will, fans out there, but I kind of remember that movie. I could be remembering a different movie about a meteor or an asteroid, but I think that's the one. I think Sean Connery was in that. We might have to look at that one at some point.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so that's cast of Two Worlds of Jenny Logan, and let's get into this a little bit. As I said, they moved into this colonial house, and Jenny finds this old 100-year-old dress in the attic after hearing there's this like little round window that popped open in the wind. So she went to shut it, hearing this strange noise from the attic, being drawn to this dress, and jokes with her friend, yeah, when you come over for the housewarming, I'll put it on for you. And as you do.
Yeah, I didn't get that either.
Maybe have it laundered with 100 years of dust on it.
Yeah.
But it was covered by a sheet.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting. I wish this was true about actual real estate. Well, because I guess they got this house for a song. I'm like, we've never seen a horror movie like this before. This big house, they got really cheap. I guess because the upkeep on old homes is, it can be a bit of a money pit. Wait, did we do that too?
Oh.
It seems like houses were kind of coming into our theme unintentionally again.
Last episode 247?
Yeah, 247, I do believe.
Yeah.
We're closing in on 250 real quick here.
Uh-huh.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. 250 episodes. We're insane. And yet, yes, we're gonna keep going.
That means we've watched at least 250 movies.
Minimum. Well, that's just for regular episodes. And then you start adding in the 31 Days of Horror, which are, you know, two episodes, but 31 horror movies for each of us.
And the comparisons are two minimum.
Yeah. True. And hey, we just did werewolves and Stephen King and COVID, and look at all the stuff we watched just for those one singular episodes each. So we've watched a whole lot of things. So she finds this dress, and when she puts it on, it's a real pain in the neck.
It really is.
Ba-dum-bum. Like she has this weird neck seizure thing every time. It's like, why would you keep putting it on? You're freaked out when you go into the past. And it really fucking hurts, apparently, the time travel.
Yeah, I don't get it.
No.
One thing I will say about all the time travel is there is a lot of really, really like excellent cuts and transitions for her going back and forth. Like when she was running from the guy chasing her on the horses and she fell onto the street. That was great.
Yeah, yes. And then there was a car right in front of her, almost running her over. Those were pretty good, yeah.
And one thing I will also say is that this movie kind of was doing some stuff that Back to the Future did a lot more of almost 5 years later. Like, just in terms of there was a lot of showing a location as it was in the present and then showing exactly what it looked like in the past, like the one road. And there's a couple scenes. It was a TV movie, but I thought that was interesting, is those sensibilities.
Yeah, I feel like those moments of tension are kind of undermined by the music cues in this TV movie. It goes too much into this canned romantic music all the time, and those are moments that could actually come off a bit tense and scary, especially when you're transitioning from times. And again, something they just didn't take quite far enough. And changing the score on this alone could really affect the mood of the film.
Yeah, I was surprised people said it was a romance, actually, because there are romantic elements, but I would consider it way more of like a time travel, like just an interesting time travel tragedy story.
Well, I definitely would call it a romance. Absolutely. It's a, but yeah, you know, with time travel, which is probably why I watched it. Because let's face it, Jan romantic movies, not so cool.
It's not more of a romance than a lot of westerns, though. I think it's just interesting, the distinction.
Oh, I would have liked to have seen like more of that, the town. I mean, this house was on the outskirts, but I would have liked to have seen more of the old west within the film. But they kept those locations really tight, so you didn't really see much beyond the house and some picturesque forest scenes or whatever. You didn't get to see any of the town per se.
Well, and the reactions to people to David would be more interesting as well. Like, who believes he killed her? Who believes he didn't kill her? Like, there's got to be some tension in town.
Like, I just kept thinking, I'm like, God, if you'd filmed that here over in Heritage Park, you could have actually shown a town.
Yes.
Like, our own city has a whole Old West. We've got several Old West sets here, including Heritage Park, which are actual old homes from the Old West. So it did kind of bug me we didn't get to see more of that, because there's locations you could go to and painted a bigger picture of this 1800 setting that you wanted to portray. It was really mainly through clothing and furniture.
Pretty much.
And occasional horses in one scene.
Yeah, that's right. We do see Harrington riding a horse, and must be the Old West, because he pulled a whip on Reynolds.
Yeah, horse whip. Guy is a bastard.
Yeah. It took David a while before he finally just grabbed onto it and pulled the guy over and ass over tea kettle. Yeah. Like, that's what you should have done the first time. Just grab that goddamn whip and pull the old man over, you old fuck.
It's harder than it looks.
I'm sure.
We've played with whips on the farm.
First time you're kind of like, what the fuck? I almost Indiana Jones'd myself with my whip. I do have a big bullwhip. Right. I'm like, I almost gave myself a Harrison Ford scar. I'm like, yeah. Oh, I got to be a little more careful with this thing.
They're harder to wield than they look.
They are. It's wrapped up in my closet somewhere. Probably needs oiling.
Nice.
Beware. I do have a big ass bullwhip.
It's part of your zombie kit.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll keep them at distance. Oh, if I could rip off some zombie heads. Yeah.
There you go.
That's right, Sage. We managed to work in zombies.
We did. But yeah, you're mentioning how like the crossover in time. I think that should be part of it, but also like the mystery of like Pamela. Like they just sort of discard that so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be nice to see the discovery of like what truly happened to her especially sort of those crossovers.
Because like right at the very beginning when she's in the attic, like he hears her screaming, she hears him screaming her name. And then there's other people like consoling him and other stuff. Like it sounded a bit more dramatic than somebody crying over somebody who is dead. It kind of, to me, sounded like somebody like, I don't know. It didn't seem to imply that Pamela was dead when she was listening to them downstairs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I just had an interesting thought. Okay. There was they had mentioned that, and Jeff had mentioned it even, that one of the reasons for David Reynolds' death could have even been this mystery woman of Jenny. Now, what of her, you know, playing Magic Hat with the dress kind of created a haunting in the past? So they were seeing visions of her from the future, or at least Pamela was, and it drove her crazy and she hung herself.
Ooh.
And that's where he's screaming. He finds the body in the attic, hung in the attic.
Ooh, spooky.
Spooky.
Yes. And he can't, like, he just leaves the dress there because he can't bear it.
Yeah.
That's the dress she died in.
Yeah. And this is echoes of the past coming forward, as well as, like, she, now Jenny's also the one who feels haunted. I really want to play with this ghost aspect a little bit. I think there's something there.
Mm-hmm. The ghost aspect, and also, like, I would lean more into, you know, that he's going to die at some point, and, like, there's possibilities about what it could be, because that in time travel is always interesting, because it's the you know, do you try to prevent something and you create the outcome in a different way? Or, but one thing I was thinking when I thought this movie was going to end in a dark direction is he gave her the flowers the first time that she talks to this man in the past, and then she takes the flowers forward into the present and they're not withered. So one thing I was wondering is if, because it was in doubt as to how he died, if she would accidentally take him into the present and then he's killed by her husband.
Yeah, I kept thinking that because they established that, we'd see something like that. Like, we'd see her pull something or somebody into the past with her. And I kept thinking, like, the way they showed it, like, she was physically moving from the present into the past.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that ending really didn't make any sense.
Yeah, that
Michael
messed me
finds
up.
Her body in the dress, but she's living the life she was dreaming about in the past. Mm-hmm. And we do see evidence of that through more paintings that they find in the house that they didn't find before. This is her promise of letting Michael know.
Uh-huh.
Unless she's actually crazy.
Yeah, if you would have left, then he wouldn't have fucking funeral bells.
Right? Well, like, no, you would have had just like a missing person inquiry, and he probably would have been questioned by the police.
Oh, that's true. This, yeah, you're right. Oh, yeah, he might have been investigated. Right. He might have been going through the same thing that poor David did in the past, being blamed for Pamela's death.
Yeah.
And now he's being blamed for Jenny's death. That would actually be quite ironic, actually, especially considering it's public knowledge of the cheating and that they were having difficulties. So there's motive too. Oh man, mm-hmm. I like that. You want your shitty ending? You want your dour ending? You got it.
It's like Gone Girl, but with time travel.
She gone to another time.
I feel like every movie needs that. Well, I guess I can't use... Why is the first movie that popped in my head was Terminator? It's like Terminator with time travel. Oh, wait.
True.
That is exactly what that is. Yeah.
You know, when you were talking about them finding the paintings at the end, the one thought that popped into my mind was, like, we don't know the timetable for how long they're living in this house.
Yeah.
Presumably, if, you know, if they live in the house long enough... What if she actually was crazy and she was like painting about the life that she thought that she was having? You know, and he like finds like he thinks that there's all this evidence of a life that she lived, but she's actually crazy.
Oh, give that audience some doubt whether any of this was actually true or not.
Yeah.
Like maybe she just had a heart attack because you could have something about because she's, you know, she always has like these pains or whatever. You could try to tie that into something about her having heart problems or something. So they think or that she just dropped
aneurysm.
Dead.
Aneurysm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Like I would say that you'd probably go like maybe the tumor route, like the pains she thinks she's feeling when she goes back in time are just like something happening with neurologically with her brain.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to write that in stone. I would just like to create that little bit of doubt.
Oh, yeah.
When you end it, it's like Total Recall when you're like, well, was it all part of his little trip? You know, mm-hmm. I'd like it just enough. So it's like it leaves doubt whether any of what she was saying was true or not. It was just true for her. So that'd be an interesting way to leave it. I love it when they leave a little mindfuck cliffhanger for you. And you, mm-hmm. and then the credits roll, and you're like, no, don't leave it like that. You've got to tell me. No, we don't. Guess what? You never forget about those kind of movies in those moments.
And that's where you get to have fun theories, and you get to have conversations with people after you've left being like, I think this is what happened.
Yeah.
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 There's the remake, Two Worlds of Jenny, and then Jenny's Third World.
And there were laser guns and Martians.
Nice.
And it wasn't Earth.
It's like, turns out she was crazy, but when she died, she traveled to an alternate dimension where she has to fight a time war.
Nice. Yes. And then she comes back and sees her husband with a young student and like just gets her revenge before anything ever happens.
Yeah. So, okay. You could open the movie with the setting up of the death of Pamela, and we could have two cold opens. We can have Jenny finding Michael with this woman, which was in the movie just really quick. It's just like a quick flash of a memory of this girl with dark hair. And Michael, but it was just enough going, what did I just see?
Yeah.
But if we pull on that thread a little bit and it unravels her just enough that we feel like, okay, well, she's saying she's gotten over this, but really she's just repressing it. And that's what's kind of unraveling her mind. Mm-hmm. But we can play with that with the psychologist character, which I think I probably forgot to cast. Oh, no, I didn't. Yay. I forgot to cast Mrs. Bates, but...
Me too.
I think we'll just make it Kathy Bates.
There we go.
It's so on the nose, right? It's on the nose.
Yep.
Yeah. That'd be like Mrs. Bates. She's going to naturally look at you anyway when you say that.
Yes.
You know, if you wanted to have a real harrowing opening, just to play off of that a little bit, you could have... not two cold opens, but one cold open that's like intercut between both of them going through the same motions of discovery, but one is discovering infidelity and the other is discovering the death of a spouse, and then like both of them screaming together.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
Yeah, I would totally play it that way, just intercut the two. Yeah.
No, but that'd be very harrowing.
It would be.
This is not your dad's Two Worlds of Jenny.
No. This ain't CBS old people safe.
No.
No, we're definitely going to, I think, I really like hiding this under a ghost story that isn't really a ghost story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's just two times meeting, which what some people believe ghosts are.
Yeah, and so if you, at least for the first part of it, you kind of intercut those moments rather than seeing the cause and effect, like of initially with the pains and stuff, we could see maybe her waking up with the headache in the dress. Whereas mm-hmm. in the past, we shift to David's perspective of seeing his lost love off in the distance all the time.
Yeah.
I don't really understand her running away from him all the time, though.
Well, okay. The first bit where he's on the horses and he's, oh my God, Pamela. And he's like coming at her in a coach with horses. I get that.
Yeah, yeah.
That's very scary.
Yeah, especially the first couple of times you'd be like, what the fuck? I was just in my attic. What's going on? Or I was just outside.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not where I was. That just being disoriented in your surroundings and then seeing that. Being almost trampled by a horse and buggy.
And then by a car. Yeah. Super fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I think those scenes are great, but they watch like a TV movie here. Like, they don't have the gravitas of that the scenes kind of feel like they should.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's one big concession I was saying to Amelia right before we started watching it, is that TV movies, I think people often write off because there kind of is, along with a certain level of a lower budget, there's also severely different issues in terms of pacing, because you have to pace with commercial breaks in mind.
Yeah.
And the structure of a TV movie is going to have different pacing and feel differently than other movies of that era. So I think they're awkward for some people to watch sometimes, just for the pacing alone.
Yeah, because, I mean, sometimes you are leaving a big dramatic beat and then going to commercial to leave that linger on a person's brain.
Mm-hmm.
When you're watching it straight, that has no impact anymore. So it's no longer lingering. It's just awkward. It watches awkwardly. Mm-hmm. So that is the downside, is because they are writing for those commercial breaks and wanting to leave you with a dramatic beat or keep you watching rather than flipping channels.
Yeah. I think getting more doubt as well, too. I think she should also be a painter of sorts, because then you have the doubt of whether he actually painted any of the paintings or she just did it because this is how she imagined it.
Well, it'd be interesting if, like, when she finds out that was a painter's studio, that she's like, oh, let's do that now. Like, yes. You know, like, that would be a good hobby once they've fixed up the house for her and taking that up. Now, if we're modernizing it, obviously we can't have 100-plus-year-old Elizabeth anymore, because it's completely implausible at this point, right? So that would actually add to the mystery part of this, and forcing Jenny to do more investigation on her own. This could also fuel paranoia or her psychosis, if that is a way the audience wants to think, as she delves more and discovers the story herself via research and the historians in the town. And honestly, finding out the old lady was Elizabeth was, I just rolled my eyes anyway. I'm like, that's dumb.
Oh, see, I knew it when they first met her. I knew that's who it was.
You know what? I actually thought it might have been Jenny.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, see, no, I went with Elizabeth.
I mean, yeah, well, you were spot on, because I, through the whole thing, I thought she was talking to herself.
Yeah.
And that would be creepy.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, like if you were to have some sort of concept where she's met herself at a severely old age because she had traveled back in time, but she has dementia, so there's like a disconnect where she might not be cognizant of the fact she's talking to a younger version of herself.
If you're talking dementia, from my experience, you can add a whole other element of it, because basically with dementia, there's times where like they don't know where they are in time.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's people, like when they have dementia, they're in their 70s, but they're like, no, I'm 42.
Yeah, definitely.
Or
yeah, my grandmother was the same way when she was had gone through that.
Yeah, so it would be interesting. Well, I always wondered it would be interesting to explore how dementia is simply slipping through time, because you're lost all the time. And it's sort of weird, like maybe it's just because your brain isn't grasping onto time anymore.
You wouldn't have to spell it out, but you could have it in the implication that it might not be dementia, but it's a side effect of her slipping back and forth between times. Like, that's got to have an effect on her brain. And, you know, if you were old to suffer from something that's very similar to dementia, or a dementia as a result of time travel.
Yeah, those are the kind of things I was thinking that were running through my brain. I'm not sure it kind of works with our remake, but there's certainly an interesting aspect. Like I said, if you're traveling back to even, like, I think this was like New Year's Eve 1899, because they were talking about the new century. So even then, that's still pretty implausible time jump at this point. You know, the person would have to be 120 years old, and that's if they were a baby. So there's there's no way. There's no way we could pull that trick off in this movie anymore.
Yeah.
But doesn't mean we can't uncover more research, letters, that sort of thing, as she uncovers this mystery of Pamela. And I would think I would love for her to discover that, you know, Pamela's suicide was because of her. When she discovers like this ghost legend that is attached to the house.
Especially because there was the scene with the breaking cabinet. Like, I thought because of that by itself, there would mean she did something in the past to cause something to change.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hated that the fact that that was just some dialogue that David said. We didn't even get to see it. In rage, he did it. And Jenny sees it broken for the first time and realizes that he's the one who did it. But God, it was like, how hard would that have been to throw some candy glass in there and get him to punch that cabinet or throw something at it?
Right?
Frustrating.
I know. And we could do just a lot more of that. And yeah, and when you say discovering stuff, she can discover, like, they might have, like, old Doc so-and-so's notes from a certain time, where it's like, Jenny appears to be hysterical. Like, oldie-timey ways to say that women are crazy.
Yeah.
So that would be, it would be really interesting. Yeah, there's got to be more crossover, I feel. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
It should be.
You know, I love the idea of, I mean, it's a little bit of a trope in some things, but you could definitely play it where she's intrigued because, like, you know, there's the ghost angle. She's investigating this thing. It's like she's investigating herself appearing in the past until she's investigating a murder. I think that's what we've been talking about, but, like, maybe not, so, you know, said so far as, like, Jenny is investigating the murder of Pamela throughout the movie as the plot.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that should be prompted by what appears to be hauntings rather than a cause and effect that shifts through time in this house. This location itself is sensitive, and the walls of time are really thin here and echo throughout history. So these weird hauntings cause her to do the research of the Reynolds house and the history of David Reynolds and Pamela. I think that's at least a good starting point.
So would you have her actually travel back in time? Like, I think if you didn't, it would be pretty similar to the others.
Yeah, I think we still need the characters to meet up. And I mean, you don't want to take the love story out of the romantic movie. I don't want to fully turn it into a horror movie or this mystery ghost story. Like, I think we can still have all the aspects in here, but yeah, I would still have her time traveling and use the dress as that crux, although I'm not sure if it's fully necessary that it's the dress, but
Well, I mean, your angle with the suicide, or that's the dress, or even if it's not a suicide, but that's the dress she died in.
Yeah, that's the connective tissue. Yeah, I think I like that a lot. I mean, it's kind of creepy in and of itself too.
Yeah. And like you say, like, if she's sort of unraveling, having an obsession with this dress and this time sort of also puts in that, like, kind of that level of doubt as to how much is actually happening, which was also interesting.
Yeah.
You know, it could be that she works in art restoration.
Oh, that's not a bad hook. We never really do find what either her or her husband do, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
just we do hear about the whole how long does it take to commute into town thing, and that's about it. Yeah. I assumed Michael was a teacher if he's sleeping with a student. So
yeah,
but I never actually did understand what Jenny did. I mean, it's the '70s, so housewife, but I hate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because if she was working in art restoration, and that's how she came across the painting of herself, that might be an interesting, you know, if that's the first weird thing that happens in the movie, that might be interesting, you know, foreboding or what do you call it.
Oh, I think she should come across that before she ever time travels.
Yeah,
It just kind of spurs the mystery of it all.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just move some of that stuff with the town historian forward a little bit. Even if you even keep her, because it seems more interesting if Jenny's the one finding this out on her own. It feels like she's more proactive about it.
Well, and it also does kind of push into the whole idea where they do move into like a historical house. And if you're trying to like repair or do anything to a historical house, you're very limited in what you can and cannot do. Mm-hmm. So having her research what's applicable also kind of pulls into that. But makes me think as well is like if she's making any changes in the past, there could be slight changes to the house that shouldn't be there.
And maybe this is part of what she does. Like she is a historian in of herself in preserving history, U.S. history, and helping renovate and upkeep these historic locations into their prime again. So it's like furniture and paintings and everything else. She's just well-rounded, maybe not in a specific thing, but... Yeah.
You know what you could do as an early scene in the movie is you could have, a thing where she tries on the dress. She takes it off. She's doing restoration in like a room where like effectively it would look similar. Basically what I'm trying to get at is you could have a scene where she's repairing part of the house, but she doesn't know that she's like doing something in the past. And then in the present, it's something like, oh, this is like this is 100 years old. But, oh, that's something I just did, you know?
Oh, that could be interesting. Yeah. And that could be also fun in the past if, like, she's doing something in the house, Reynolds isn't home, and then he's like, what the hell? Why is my house fixing itself?
Yeah, they could have, like, something like maybe the door is messed up or, like, there's a new table or something's done with the table.
Yeah.
Just, like, little...
Yeah. Even if it's just moving objects or whatever. Because I kind of want the haunting to go both ways initially before the time travel aspect's fully revealed.
It's like you want to kind of play up the unsettling aspects of like things not being how they should be or something's not quite right in the present. Think talking about fixing up the house, you know, something happens that causes him to add another wing to the house or change it in some way. And you have a situation where she's disoriented living in her own house because it is a little bit different from her point of view.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like just
from
the,
what she left.
I like the idea of the impossible house.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like she left it a certain way. And then when she went to go see David, something changed and then she came back.
Mm-hmm.
Right. It's interesting.
Yeah.
You don't want to make it like the Winchester house, but yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Well, I think We're kind of on to something here now. Maybe we can flesh that out with some casting.
Yeah.
Yes.
Jeff, you want to start us off?
You know, so I was thinking about, it's really tough because I feel like the age range, I basically, I'm undecided about how old I would want to be this the main character of Jenny to be.
Yeah, I was trying to kind of do the math. Lindsay Wagner would have been about 30 when she played this role. And that's 30-ish. Like, casting on this was really hard. But I think because they don't have kids or anything, so I think they should still be kind of young couple-ish. So, like, that late 20s and mid-30s would be pretty good, I think.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was thinking, too. You are right. Casting for this one was really tough. I never did decide on anybody for Jenny. But I would be curious what you guys would have to say about it. For the other people, for her husband, I was thinking it would be cool to have someone like Justin Theroux, just because I liked how he had these aspects of he did a shitty thing that is unforgivable and you can justify her not wanting to forgive him. But he also like makes all these efforts to repair it and like doesn't really show himself to be a bad person otherwise, but he kind of still has these undertones of like she puts out more of an effort than he does in some ways. Mm-hmm. And anyway,
I like how they're Michael, their actor who played Michael, Alan Feinstein, kind of looks shady at the same time.
Yeah.
Like he always tries to be a loving husband, but he does have moments of shittiness when he preferred to watch his basketball game rather than talk to her until it was over. And then he turns into a loving husband again. So when I did my casting, I was trying to think of somebody like, okay, he needs to be handsome, can pull off loving husband, but still look kind of sinister.
Yeah. Or just plain selfish.
Yeah.
And like Justin Theroux in The Leftovers specifically, he had such a full range of like acting in that show as a dramatic actor, but he's definitely flipped the switch and played completely like evil cartoon character. So like he has this kind of strange range that you can't quite describe, but I think the character kind of needs to be someone you can't quite put your finger on. So
I'd agree with that.
But yeah. And for the guy in the past, just to play into the romance angle, I was thinking like, I don't know, like Ryan Gosling or something.
I thought about it. I'm like, he's already kind of done it.
He has done it, but he's very successful at it.
That's true.
And he definitely is like a pulpy, like he's a fan of pulp-esque material. I mean, if this was kind of a horror-y, like if it was maybe something that you could hook the Notebook, teen romance novel fans, but it's actually like a time travel ghost story. That would be a fun way to do it.
Well, I kept thinking like, okay, if you, this would be like theatrical, you want it to be a good date movie. So if you brought in some of those aspects, then the boyfriend's not going to be bored. I was like thinking my experience with The Notebook, the only movie I have fallen asleep in. And literally, I saw 15 minutes at the beginning, 15 minutes the end, the rest of it's kind of hazy. I'm like, I have never fallen asleep in a theater before, but I did during The Notebook, pulling hardcore boyfriend duty on that one particular one, because I did not want to see that movie, and apparently neither did my subconscious, because I went fully comatose. So that would probably kind of keep me interested in the movie. And I don't mind romantic aspects of movies. I've certainly watched my share of good and bad romantic comedies, some on my own and some for this show. Yes. So,
'cause I make you.
Well, I have a hatred for romantic comedies, but I come by it honestly because there's a formula to a lot of romantic comedies.
And it must be fit.
Yeah, that drives me nuts, because you could literally write all the beats on a piece of paper and it would describe like 100 different movies.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's why I hate it. It's so formulaic. But I had to discover that the hard way.
Yeah.
But at least this one isn't quite like that. In a lot of ways, it does kind of steer away from even regular conventions, which I did enjoy. Yeah. Did you have any more casting? So we got a little sidetracked again. Yeah.
No, you know what? There's not a lot of characters in this movie, quite honestly.
Not really. I mean, you're thinking you're thinking Jenny, David, Michael, Elizabeth.
Oh, yeah, there's Elizabeth, too.
They're the big ones.
I would want Christina Ricci to play Elizabeth.
And Harrington. Sorry, who?
Christina Ricci.
Oh, it's been a while since we've seen her. I like that choice.
She was really good in... she was just in a Lizzie Borden series that I just got the movie of, and the movie's good.
Nice.
So.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, the Lizzie Borden thing, she's done that period look, and she really rocks it.
Yeah. And she, you know, obviously can play a villainous kind of...
She can play
a character that's like that.
Yeah, wasn't she in Sleepy Hollow, I want to say?
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, and she was great in looking period in that as well. So and let's face it, she doesn't mind a gothic ghost story, too.
New.
I'm cool with that. I like that choice. All right. Trish, what do you got? Oh, do you have a director, Jeff, in mind? I had difficulty with that, but I was thinking, like, this feels like very, like, a Blumhouse movie. Not that I got a chance to look up directors, but yeah, that's kind of the feel I was kind of going for with this one.
Yeah, you know, there was one director that I did think of while I was watching it that would be perfect, and the director I thought who would be really interesting for this type of movie would be Frank Darabont. And just
not his usual fare.
Yeah, because it's like I wouldn't want this to be an outright horror movie,
Yeah.
But he's done a lot of movies that are not outright horror movies. I mean, other than the first season of Walking Dead, I guess. But he's worked in a lot of period settings before. He does obviously have a master understanding of storytelling in film. I think it would be really interesting, the tone of his movies to bring to a movie like this, I think would match really well.
Right.
Nice.
Cool.
Yeah. He's never done time travel. He's just done, like, Stephen King weirdness. He did Shawshank Redemption, but, Walking Dead is zombies, so, I think he'd do the pulpy material for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he definitely could pull that one off. All right, yeah. Trish, what do you got?
All right, so for Jenny Logan, I have Emily Browning.
Ooh.
Because she strikes me as sort of like that period person, and I think she might be the kind of... I skewed a bit younger. She just popped into my head, and I'm like, I could see her in this type of movie, going in between time. And I really liked her in American Gods recently. I was rewatching some of that. So mm-hmm. I thought, hey, why not? And then for David Reynolds, I went with Bill Skarsgård. I don't think I've seen him in period stuff.
Oh, but... I like that choice, too. I can totally picture that.
Yeah, I think he's a good romantic lead. For Michael Logan, I went with Joshua Hull, and he's... got a part on a TV show I like called Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, mm-hmm. and he's handsome, and I could see him being, I think he really fits into what we're doing. He could be loving, but you're not quite sure what to make of him.
Right.
He'll cheat as long as he doesn't get caught. I think he could play that. Yes. And for Elizabeth, I went with Anna Paquin.
Okay.
Because I think she could be villainous, but also very like in that period where she's like, yes, that cunning villainy. But she could totally kill someone if she wanted to.
Yeah.
And then for Harrington, I went with Pete Gardner, who's another character who plays Daryl Whitefeather on Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. He's played a lot of comedy, but I think he could be a very kind of evil kind of dude. Mm-hmm. If he's got the mustache for it. he really does. and then Dr. Erica Loren, I went with Rachel Dratch because I swear Rachel Dratch is like a dead ringer for Dr. Erica Loren.
Oh, that's cool.
And then for director, I went with Greta Gerwig because I wasn't quite sure what I was going with, but I know she directed Little Women. So I was like, maybe that would be the right period we're in, because I didn't quite know where we were going with this. So that's who I had.
That's a great choice. I watched a roundtable discussion with her and a bunch of other directors because she's Noah Baumbach's wife.
Oh,
and
okay.
So for years, not long ago, she had her directorial debut, and I think Little Women was her second movie. But
yes,
way before that, she's been like, around helping her husband write his movies and like a voice contributing to that. So she has a really good understanding of story and, the kind of like slice of life type stuff that her husband does. But she has a great eye for directing. And for Little Women specifically, like Steven Spielberg gave her all of his notes from when he shot Lincoln. Because he's like, I did all this research for the period. You may as well use all of
nice.
It. So she's, great choice.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, thanks.
Very cool. That's some of the best casting you've come up with so
Yay!
Far. I like
Thank
it.
Thank you. I'm very happy with it. Like, as soon as I hit Emily Browning and Anna Paquin, everything just fell into place.
Well, I might have been shooting too big on this one, but and it's weird because I'm like, oh, most of my cast wound up being British. I guess you could change the setting if you want, but we'll stick it with the Old West for now. I mean, these are at least actors who are very good at covering up their accents. For my Jenny, because she looks great in period outfits and has got some good range and about the right age, I went with Keira Knightley.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah. For her husband, Michael, I went with Domhnall Gleeson from Ex Machina, another... a wonderful British actor, but he's kind of got a look of menace to him too, which is what I was going for because he's handsome, but at the same time, you can kind of see him playing a villain if you wanted to. And this is a case of a husband who's sometimes at the end of his rope and doesn't always make the best decisions. Not so much a villain per se.
And what he also has done is he's done a time travel romance with Rachel McAdams, who Rachel spends a lot of time having romances in time.
Which is amazing that nobody's cast her in this yet.
Give her a break.
She's like, I can't do it anymore.
Let Rachel live in her own time.
I feel like I am Jenny. For David, again, I wanted... there was something of like... Mark Singer's kind of unconventionally handsome. Like,
yes.
It's what I call the ugly handsome.
I don't know. He's got
it's a different kind of look, but you could definitely see, like, oh yeah, he's definitely a handsome dude, but not in the traditional sense. And I feel that way about Tom Hiddleston, who would be, yes, if you're going to be pulling out from some sort of Harlequin romance, it looks like Tom Hiddleston walked out of one.
Oh, I love that casting. I love that.
Yeah, so he's my David. And for Elizabeth Harrington, I went with Anna Brewster. You might not be familiar with her. She's another British actress. She's most recently in the Netflix film, The Last Days of American Crime. And she's very attractive, much like Linda Gray. But there, again, there's this, because of her character, she has this sense of menace about her. She's the femme fatale of this neo-noir story. So I thought she'd be a good choice for this obsessive sister. Yeah, so I went with her. The way we've done this, I feel like we should have cast poor Pamela, but it slipped my mind. Now, for Harrington, again, we needed somebody a bit older. I was thinking mid-60s, who can pull off mean. And I don't know. For some reason, I landed on Kevin Bacon.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, full circle a little bit. We opened up this podcast roughly with a discussion of Robert Englund, brought it back around, talking about Kevin Bacon. Robert Englund wants Kevin Bacon to be Freddy, and Kevin Bacon said he also wants to be Freddy. So that
oh, nice.
There you go. Well, you just Kevin Bacon this whole thing.
It's another degree.
And I did cast my Dr. Lauren, and just because I love her to death, Octavia Spencer from Hidden Figures.
Nice.
This lovable person that would be in this movie, that would be the voice of reason through all of this, which may absolutely not all, but this is a movie where logic doesn't always apply. Now, while you guys were doing your casting, I did kind of look up a director because I was thinking about a ghost story that wasn't a ghost story. And the first thing I thought was, oh man, that wonderful New Zealand film called Housebound.
Yes.
So I went with Gerard Johnstone as my director for that, who wrote and directed Housebound. Like, sweet. I said, it was a ghost story movie that wasn't.
Yes.
Spoiler, still good.
It's really good. And I
feel bad for telling you, but the movie's been out for a while.
The atmosphere, yeah, it's like 5 years old. The atmosphere to it is really good. Like, he would be nailing that, like, stuff is moving, stuff isn't quite right atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think he'd be the perfect person to capture that atmosphere.
Yeah.
So did any new thoughts about the movie form while we were doing our casting here?
Yeah, I'm just trying to think who I could put as Pamela. I want to do Rachel McAdams. It just seems like she should be there.
Oh, just give her that little cameo going, yeah, fine.
She's always in a time travel romance. Let's just put her in there.
She's also an Easter egg.
Yeah.
I don't hate that. Any of the Doctor Who companions.
Well, I'm just wondering, like, I know we've kind of gotten to, like, the meat of the movie, and she's crossovering, she's kind of caught Pamela's, like, she sort of caused what happened to Pamela, and there is the romance, there's the story. Did we ever land on, are we doing the same thing where Jenny ends up in the past, or, and there's an investigation? Was that what we landed
on? Well, yeah, I don't know if we fully, like, I guess we kind of need to define the rules a little bit better than the movie did. Because up until we find her body at the end of the movie, I didn't realize she was physically in both places.
Right.
Which I guess maybe makes sense if she's moving physically. I just assumed she was reappearing in the time frame where she started. But at the same time, if she was moving in both spaces at the same time and it was just looks like a psychotic break, then chances are the car isn't going to be screeching at her, because they probably would have seen her from quite a ways away, stumbling around the road, looking forlorn or whatever. But so, I'm not sure.
I think be better she should if physically she just disappeared. Move.
Yeah, disappear. I think physically moving and, you know, I'm sorry, Michael, we're going to have to put you through some shit. Because if she disappears permanently, then he's going to be going. And I kind of like that, because it's an ironic 360. It kind of ends where it began, with David going through the same thing. this kind of tragedy with David losing his wife, but finding a new love with Michael's wife from the future. So now Michael's kind of stuck in this similar scenario where, you know, he's being blamed or investigated for disappearance. I mean, there'd be no evidence, but he'd be going through some bad shit for a little while, and I'm sure blame would come his way for the disappearance of Jenny. That could be something that comes from Jenny's friends, because we do have some of those at the beginning of the film as well.
You could have some sort of implication. Well, so the implication is there because of the paintings, but yeah, I mean, if she disappears and he would know, especially if they find that wife isn't dead. Yeah. She's in the past.
Yeah,
that's not a great argument.
No, and if they have that, is like, well, no, that's just somebody who looks like her, right? Like he might have photographs, he might have paintings, but I mean, nobody in their right mind's going to believe that that's the same person, no matter how much they look alike.
Oh, and he ends up in like a mental facility, and then Dr. Erica Lauren. She is like, oh no, I thought I was treating the right person. Turns out that was the insane one. she figures out he's insane and is like going, oh no, this is so sad.
It'd be interesting if he was the one consulting with the psychologist the whole time and Jenny would refuse to see her. So now the psychologist is like, did Jenny really exist?
Right?
There's this whole thing where I really love the idea of like every argument that Jenny is giving him, he is rebutting. And then that turns into everything that he's trying to present as evidence to free his name from a murder charge or suspicion is the same things that Jenny was trying to say. And people say the same things back at him. I kind of love that idea.
Yeah, I feel like it's the ironic Twilight Zone ending where it comes back around. It's like, maybe you should have listened to your wife a little bit more.
Exactly.
This is one of the reasons why your relationship collapsed. That and sticking your dick where it doesn't belong.
Yes. Yeah, they should have both moved on from that marriage. When I was first watching this movie, I'm like, I know you're trying to repair it, but maybe just call it a day.
Well,
yeah, it's interesting to it.
I knew a couple like that. That had happened to, and they had separate bedrooms, and it was like, oh wow, why are they bothering with this?
Right?
Like, it's a ballsy move to try to save your marriage by buying a house.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Especially in today's economy.
Hey, come on. Post-COVID, real estate's pretty cheap right now.
Yeah. Now it's time to buy, people.
Is it sad that when you were like, oh, it's not feasible to have somebody who's that old now? I was like, oh, yeah, because there's not as many old people right now because of COVID post 2020. That's what I thought you were mentioning earlier.
Oh,
yes.
That's dark.
Yeah.
That's what I thought too.
Oh no. Come on.
Our brains are affected by this whole thing.
It's a serious question. Are we going to see less of a depiction of very elderly people in media just because that isn't necessarily our global reality as much anymore?
Or just putting them at risk while the disease is still out there? I don't know.
Absolutely.
Our elderly actors. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, generally with Hollywood, everything marches on. And yeah, I don't know. I don't think it will. I think it'll be. I mean, there's always going to be a need for older actors in movies. I mean, no matter how good the makeup is.
Oh, there'll be a need, but there might be a limit of how many.
Yeah, I mean, I could see until vaccine is out there, I can see maybe being like minimal sets while an elderly actor's on set to minimize exposure and risk to that actor. But, you know, an actor's going to act, and we've seen Hollywood will march on regardless.
The next Expendables movie will be very different. Because they're all in that zone, right?
Well, good hunk of them, yeah. Jason Statham's got a few more good convincing action years left in him, but he's about the only one in that cast other than Liam there, so...
Well, Liam died, so...
Oh, that's right. His character died. That's right. He blew up on the hill. So, never mind. Yeah, so, I don't know. I don't see another Expendables movie actually happening, but...
No. Not for sure now. Well, the Expendables versus COVID.
Well, Bruce Willis suddenly doesn't get along with anybody anymore, so...
No.
bunch
of Bruce Willis turned into the John Byrne of actors?
Maybe. I don't think our audience knows who John Byrne is, except our comic book fans that I brought along with me. But yes, the crotchety actor who doesn't get along with anybody else.
Yeah.
But it could be worse. He could be Mel Gibson.
True. Mm-hmm.
Just incapable of suppressing his racist tendencies.
Yep.
You know, in that breath, I think Mel Gibson would be a good casting for Pamela's father.
I could kind of see that.
Yeah, I could totally see that. Oh, and that version would be a slave owner.
Absolutely. So
you'd definitely want to see something bad happen to him.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why he has a whip, so.
Oh. Well, I had a weird Twilight Zone-ish idea for this that it didn't really go anywhere because I'm like, I don't think anybody wants to see this. But what I had was I gender swapped this thing where it was like a white guy in a suit. And then at a certain point, like he goes into the body of the other person in the past. And then one of the slaves has on the jacket and he gets put back there. They rip the jacket off and he's stuck in the slave's body for like the rest of his life.
Interesting.
But that's a Twilight Zone episode. I was like, no, that's a Twilight Zone episode. That's not a movie.
Yeah.
You know, there's like an interesting subgenre of articles of clothing that you put on your body that transport you to another time.
Yeah, wasn't there like, I remember a kid's show like that with the hats. Mm-hmm. And they'd be either time travel or they'd be like put in, suddenly you're a construction worker. Or, you know, if you put on a construction hat or something and... I don't remember what that was called. I'm sure a lot of our listeners do, but it wasn't overly one of my favorites. But yeah, and there's magic chests. And yeah, it is a weird little thing that comes back around often, I think.
Yeah, there's one called Voyagers with the little watch thing. I love that.
Oh, I remember Voyagers. I like that one. That might be a good one to remake. Good forgotten one, that one.
Yeah, it had John Eric Hexum in it. I remember because I was a little kid being like, ooh.
It was a series, wasn't it?
It was a series, yeah. And they're traveling through repairing time errors.
Right.
It was silly, but it was enjoyable.
I remember it was short-lived, but I liked it.
Yeah, I almost feel like we need to do a time travel month.
There's a lot.
Maybe down the road. Let us know if you want us to do more remaking or just see if there's some remakes even of time travel movies. Let us know if you want that theme month at Invasion Remake on Twitter, Invasion the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and invasiontheremake@gmail.com if you want to email us your suggestions, your corrections, your comments, or your fan challenges like Sage did, bringing us the two worlds of Jenny Logan this week. Thank you, Sage, for your recommendation. I actually enjoyed the movie. I was a little skeptical. I'm like, CBS TV movie. And as much as I love Lindsay Wagner, I really only loved her as the Bionic Woman and most of her movie stuff. I'm like, that does not appeal to me at all.
You know, not just to cast shade on the other fan challenges, but after the last couple, my expectations were pretty low.
Well,
we just make fun.
We actually have heard from Kate again.
Nice.
But we'll save it. We'll give it some distance. But he actually recommended a film I'm actually aware of.
Nice.
And I have his phone number, so maybe we'll pull him in one of these days and complete the Cage trilogy. But this week's all about Sage and her choice here, and it was a particularly good one. We also got another fan letter about a week ago now, and I'm sorry to Scott Young that I haven't actually replied to him personally, but Scott Young had discovered our show. And he discovered us on the remaking of Santa Claus Conquers the Martians and had some insights on that particular episode. Apparently, a reimagining is actually in the works, fully endorsed by the daughter of the director of that film. And there's even a role written for a 60-year-old Pia Zadora for that film. And I guess the script is in Tim Burton's hands. And we did mention Tim Burton very heavily within that episode.
Yeah.
So thanks to Scott for writing us about that. I love seeing stuff like that, and I'll see sometimes those comments over on YouTube or some of our other places as well. So keep sending us your feedback. If you just want to chat about a movie, great. I'm horrible at getting back to people in a timely manner, but I will get back to you. I do have a day life and a day job, so it sometimes keeps me from replying until like sometimes days or even weeks later, but I will get back to you eventually. And Sam's a little quicker on the Twitter feed, but sometimes I'll see your letters. I'm in middle of work, and by the time I get off work, I've completely forgotten I've seen it. So and every time I remember, it's the worst opportune time to reply. So I will try to get back to you as best I can, but don't worry. Your letters are being seen and heard. And if you got a found challenge, I'll try to write back to you whether we're going to do it or not and let you know. And it's always fun to see your recommendations, even the ones we might pass by. It's going to happen. we can't do everything that comes by our desk. Sometimes it's just not viable. Sometimes it's a more recent movie that a person didn't like. But as we've stated in the past, we're not going to kick something when it's down. So yeah. We'll try to keep it to the kind of rules we've set out in the past where... Yeah. It is something with a nugget of a good idea that might not have found its feet the first time. And so far, man, you guys are picking some great stuff.
Absolutely.
And some surprising stuff that we've never seen before. And that's always interesting for us as well, is if we get to investigate a movie we've never heard of before. We cross our fingers and hope it's good. Or at least has some good stuff in it.
True. It's been a delight to like experience some stuff that I had no idea was out there.
Mm-hmm. And this was no different, as I would have been pretty young at 79, so I was unaware of this TV movie, but I actually quite enjoyed it for being a TV movie. So,
well worth watching. It's free and it's on YouTube. The one that I watched is even an HD version. So
nice. Yeah, and there's probably more of that kind of thing on YouTube now. I still want to stress, we kind of try to stay away from TV stuff, but if you pick something that's pretty good, that might have some nuggets of a good idea, I mean, there are rules to break after all, so feel free to suggest them, but, you know, try to keep them features as best you can, but, you know, if you find a TV movie or something like that, that is worth doing. We won't touch a TV series, so don't even ask us to try to turn a TV series into a movie, because it's too much material to watch and then try to wind down into like a hour and a half episode, 2 hour episodes. So we're not going to touch that stuff. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, people are paid for that. We're not paid for any of this after 5 years. So
FYI, the Santa Claus Conquers the Martians thing, a lot of stuff that we've mentioned is happening now, and we're wondering what we're getting paid.
Yes. There's a ghost story. Things are happening with that one, too.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Down the road, when we start seeing these things arise, I'm like... I'm happy for the credit, but I'm also really happy for a residual check.
Yes. Absolutely.
But a thank you would be nice.
You just want to be seen.
That's right. And we want us to be heard. So make sure you tell your friends and family about the show and where to find us. You can find us on our central hub on our Wix site, which you can find the link on our social media. Sam's the usual one that reads it out to you, but come on, it's easy to find. I just told you where the social media is. And on the Wix site, guess what? There's links to our TeePublic store now, and we've got t-shirts up there and masks. You can get masks there as well. So make sure you get yourself some Invasion of the Remake swag while you are perusing our site for the latest episodes. Of course, we're also on all your favorite podcast platforms: Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and even freaking YouTube. So make sure you tell your friends and family about the show, where to find us, because there's... no avoiding the invasion. It's here, the remakes are happening, and we will take them to task and defend you against these imposters.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. While making our own.
Yes. Yes, we're both part of the problem and the solution.
But ours is all theoretical, so if they get made, it's not really our fault. Nobody put a gun to their heads to do this.
It is kind of like that, you know, 1950s sci-fi idea of, you know, aliens are attacking, so the government tries to develop the same weapons. So we're just, you know, we're remakes have been, that's the alien weapon, and we're trying to reverse engineer how we make our own remake.
That's right.
We're Area 51? Yeah.
And that is also where we record the podcast.
Yeah, true.
Well, different areas of Area 51 right now because of social distancing, yes. But someday we will convene back into the mothership all together again. But thanks to our audience for bearing with us, because we know the audio is a slight dip in quality because of recording remotely, but it seems like you're still enjoying us during these dark days, and we're happy to help get you through that, and we're happy to hear your responses to that, is that we're still doing this during this time as well. So we appreciate all the good kind words that we've been getting recently, and we will keep pumping these episodes out for you. 250 is around the corner, as well as our, we're about a month or so away from our fifth anniversary. It'll be 5 years soon of Invasion of the Remake, and that makes us one of the old man podcasts at this point. We've been around for a little while now. We've been here for
like hitting Marin years.
We're like we're like the Gen Xers of podcasters, because there's the first really big iTunes podcast generation, and then it kind of went away for a while, and then there's like the current new post serial podcast generation. We started somewhere in between.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Serial faded after two seasons. We're still here.
Yeah.
And you do have a couple of Gen Xers and you.
Yeah.
On the show. So we got a few generations
represent.
You do. You represent millennial. Are you a millennial?
Yeah.
You'd be a millennial.
1993.
No wonder I'm always so mean to you. But we got it all covered. We got the perspectives covered, at least that side of the fence anyway. But yeah, all right, that was good. Thanks to Sage for the two worlds of Jenny Logan from 1979. Keep them coming, guys. We love hearing from you. Next week, we're going back to some horror, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. You're going to have to join us next week. Until then, I've been Jason. He's always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And I am Jeff Omega.
And we are out of here.
Michael, I'd like to go again to Fire Island tomorrow, if it's all right with you.
It's okay. I'll miss you. I'll worry about you.
Don't worry about me. I'll be all right no matter what happens.
What is happening?
Please, it'll only hurt you.
Tell me. Let me worry about the hurt. I think I have a right to know.
I'm in love with David Reynolds. And he's in love with me.
He isn't real.
Oh, he is. He is. I'm a part of his life. He's asked me to go away with him to Paris. But he's going to be killed if I can't stop it. Look, I've gone back. I've seen it start, and I can see it coming. There's going to be a duel between David and Mr. Harrington. Now, that is Pamela's father. And unless I can find some way to stop it, this Mr. Harrington is going to kill him. Don't believe a word I've been saying.
I believe that you believe it.
I belong there. I don't want to live here in this time anymore. I feel warmed there. By everything, by him, by the way the world was then. The kind of life I could have with him. I want to have his children. I want to grow old with him. I love him.
You can't go away with him. You can't save him. He's already dead.
But couldn't he survive some way? If the past still exists right now and I can go to him, couldn't I change what's going to happen?
I love you. I don't want you to go away from me.
I know you do. I know. And I'm sorry you have to go through this. I don't understand it. But if it's meant to happen to me, it must be meant to happen to you too. Can't you see that?
But how would I ever know what happens to you if you went away with him? If you just disappear and I never hear from you again?
Oh, I'll find a way. I promise you I will find some way to get through and let you know. It's possible to break through the barriers of time and space. I know that now, Michael. David did the night he broke the cupboard downstairs. But I belong there, and I belong with him. And if I can't find some way of saving his life and being with him, I just don't think I want to live either.